So this is actually the material that they make. The first shift, most people come on the top. This is made mostly by feet. So you're stamping on the, like your feet, she's stamping on the mix of sand and clay. And she introduces layers of straw, and then she'll turn it with the plastic below.
So it's just sand, clay, and water, and straw.
Yes.
Is there a specific reason why you don't make them square? Because I have seen in Pakistan the same, but they were still making them square.
No, you can
square.
Make them square, and then what they do is they dry it, and then they build it with bricks, brick style. You know, yeah. If you make it like this, if you make it liquid, this is very, very fluid. Even if you make it square, it's going to deform. Once you put on the wall, you have to stamp on it. You have to also use prongs to push the straw in. Like you see, when I push it, goes in and goes to the other side and then interlocks with the straw below. So it's basically what you do when on the wall is actually you're actually trying to weave a textile of the straw layer above to the straw layer below and the straw layer below. So you create a textile which is more or less interwoven, and the clay and the sand in between provide the compressive strength, you know. So the straw provide the tensile strength. So it's actually monolithic, the whole structure. It's one piece, you know. So that's the advantage of the fluid style. If you make bricks out of it and dry it, then you have dry bricks, and then you have to stack them with a mortar, and that's another technique. That's also possible, but that needs time. You know, here we are making and putting, making and putting.
So how much has this been utilized here in India? This technique.
It was very popular before the big industrial movement, before the factories came up. You know? In the villages, this was one of the primary techniques besides rammed earth and adobe to build.
And the houses lasted for a long time?
Yeah. There are, you know, in Chitradurga Fort, there's a recorded example of a house on a fort which has stood about 500 years without, you know, without protection. Even the roof is not there now, but the walls are still standing. You know, so it's possible in India also.
Mm-hmm. Is there any sign either in what you're doing here or what you've just quoted as ancient examples of actual cracking through drying out?
What we're doing here, we've had cracks, I should admit, several times. And in fact, we tried, you know, to break away from the tradition a lot, and every time we did, we suffered a little. You know, so the first time we did was when we had so much pressure to build the walls fast, so we employed a JCB, a machine to mix, and it was doing the full thing, the mixing of the sand and the clay and the straw, and it was delivering batches very fast. We were building very fast, the walls went up very fast. In a week, we did something which we would otherwise do in the traditional method in a month. You know, so it almost, the speed went up four times. But we realized after a month or so of drying, there were so many cracks coming in the walls. Yeah. So many cracks, and then we had to demolish a lot of those walls.
Because the actual mixing was inadequate.
Not proper, in the sense that it was not uniform. That's probably the experience of the driver. Then the second is the clay content might have been a little more, because the testing was not proper. And the water might also have been a little more. So there were various reasons. And Rene, what do you have anything to say on that?
I was there. The main thing is actually the cob is a material which it has a kind of, we learn by experience that it takes a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. And the wetter you make it, the easier it is to make, and the slower you can build actually, because you can only make thin layers. It has to dry gradually. Because if you then, and that was the case also with the JCB cob, at some point we could actually make, in a very short time, we could make 2 feet, and it's great, we can reach all targets now, we can go very fast. But then it started cracking, the outside was completely dry and the inside was still completely wet. It was not drying gradually, and that was one reason why it's still, I think, we can look into it, but it is more a craftsmanship you need to learn. For instance, now, okay, you see in the literature or you find that it's possible with a JCB, but these are people who have been doing it for 25 years, who have been really really get a feeling of what it is, and that is at the moment not yet here. So who knows, maybe in the future we can train people for that, but right now, and it's, of course, it's also more ecological. And all in all, when we've tried all different kinds of methods, and to be honest, at the end, we still always come back to the footwork. It might maybe take some more time, but the quality is good. And actually, you so much more you don't lose so much in time. This,
besides the JCB, we tried the pan mixer. You know, the mixer machine which is used for your lime mixing, you know, the pan mixer. And that also did not succeed in making good quality mixes, and it was also getting stuck inside. And
that was the main thing. Yeah. The quality, but at some point the quality was okay, but the whole effort you had to put in, it was even more than going with, because also the cleaning and everything got stuck, and it was
quite a bit of experimenting with the process. And the whole objective was to speed up the construction all the time. You know, we were trying to mechanize. We even went to Villapuram to see a screw cannon machine, which is actually double, two screws turning like this, and you introduce the mix at the top, and then it sort of mixes. And even there, it got stuck. The whole thing got jammed. The moment you introduce straw, it works with just the earth. The moment you put the straw in, it sort of totally jams. Even the machine is so strong, it can't break all that straw up. So we realized how important a role straw is in this, because even the powerful machine, the whole thing gets jammed with just adding a little straw. So it's taking a lot of tension.
No thing that you would actually introduce movement joints at all?
In the structure?
In the walls, yeah.
Movement joints. Well, we've not thought of introducing, except for the roof, you know, where we said the roof should not directly go into the cob wall, but what we're doing is we're introducing jams in the wall, and then putting the roof on the jams with a bolt, you know, so it can move. The whole roof can move a little in the cyclone or something, and it does not disturb the walls, you know, so walls don't get extra tension, bending moments or something at that joint, you know.
If you look at the buildings in other buildings in Oroville, they're built with, I don't know, concrete blocks or something like that. Cracks all over the place. I mean, in the West, you actually are supposed to introduce movement joints because it will crack. And people here don't know that.
It's an emerging consciousness in construction, at least in India. People think strength of materials is the most important thing. People don't think of flexibility, movement, you know, the forces. So we have that as the big problem here.
Those movement joints where you said the roof, is it also
you can see this roof joining with the wall there. You see the jam, and this roof is actually not going into the wall. This roof is resting on this kind of strut at the end, and with the bolt, you know. So that point, it can move a little.
What about the top roof?
Top also would be like that.
And the top will...
The ridge is also...
Here.
Yes.
So it moves like...
It moves. It can move a little bit.
Like two places.
Every bolt, it can move two directions. Two degrees of freedom.
Okay.
It's not the perfect thing. Ideally, you should do the ball and socket with 3 degrees of freedom. But that you need, especially if you're... Like here, we've done 3 degrees of freedom. All these columns are resting on a single pivot. So the column actually can go in any direction. It can move. It can move, turn, all that in any direction. So the joint has got flexibility.
Which roof? Over the beams?
On the main structure, we will use terracotta Mangalore tile roof, and on this we are actually going to put a green roof.
That's an open terrace.
Well, it's not a terrace because it's too sloped. It's about 12 degrees slope, so we want to try this the wild grass technique a little to see how it works in Oroville. We've not done it before, but
what is the wood?
This is Palmyra.
Okay.
Palmyra wood.
How are you insulating?
The roof, we are not insulating because what we're using is we're using the heat of the sun to create a hot loft.
Yes.
And then we create a vent with solar chin to suck the whole thing.
Hot air out.
Yes, and then create some gaps in the loft.
Yeah.
So that more hot air is sucked
from
the house.
So the loft then is non-habitable.
It's non-habitable. Okay. It's just for storage.
Yeah.
And also in some cases just false ceiling and just false ceiling is with insulation.
Okay.
And we have this light straw clay for that.
Okay.
We made panels.
Okay.
It's 2 feet square with light straw clay. Just straw dipped in clay slip. And then we compress it in formwork. So create a compressed tile of light straw clay, which works like insulating, you know, panel, like a particle board. So we don't have to go to the factory. We can make it ourselves. That's the whole thing, you know.
Okay. So,
there's a question.
Not specifically this technology, but this is how we used to build when we came here.
Yes, of course.
You know, and you'd build your own house, and there was no housing problem for newcomers.
Yes.
You just went ahead and you built a house.
Yes.
And now you've got nothing but problems.
Yes, there's so many hurdles for people if they want to really build their own house themselves. You know?
What is it, this? Because then it's a support things, no?
This is actually the wet side of the slab on the top. This is the toilet, you know, the bathroom and the toilet.
There is not only a mat in the way, no? There is
this is concrete.
Slab, no?
This is concrete.
So you have a concrete
slab.
Yeah, you have
this
a concrete.
Only for the wet
supporting.
Area. For the wet
yeah.
area. And for the dry area where the beds are, we use wood.
Mm-hmm. You use wood. And after you the floor will be in wood.
Wood,
right.
Yeah.
Great.
And I felt that at least in the initial houses, we should not go do any radical experiments with the wet area. And we should protect, you know, and be careful. And maybe we can continue with experiments to substitute RCC with lime-reinforced slabs and things like this. But we still have to do it elsewhere before putting it in the houses. So we would like to try it in the smaller houses which we're making there and see how it works. And then when we're confident, we will do it here.
Is all the earth that you're using?
It's all the earth.
Yeah. Is it all excavated just immediately on site?
Yes. You see these pits out here?
Yeah.
No? That's one pit.
Okay.
On the other side, there are many other pits.
Yeah.
And we dig out and we find that at each pit, the clay content is very different.
Is it really?
Very different from 18% to 33%. No, we've had that range. So that's a very big range. So we've had to, you know, for some pits, we've had to put sand in. Other pits, no sand. We can work straight with the earth.
Gluing clay or not gluing?
Yes. We need to reduce the clay content. If you have too much clay, you'll have too much cracking. And so we add sand to reduce the clay. You know? So this works quite well.
And what should we do? Is a pit percolation hole or what should we do?
Yes. This pit actually now is being used by the JCB to do a pre-mix. Now what we stopped that just recently, but till recently we were using a JCB to mix the sand and the clay together. The earth part.
What is JCB?
Is an earth mover. You know, the big machine with the claws.
A bulldozer. Yeah.
Bulldozer, yes. They were helping. That's just the name of a company that's taken
now,
over.
Now I know, you know, I'm French. Huh?
JCB is French, is it?
Can I ask you this?
Yes.
I see lots of pipes going outside.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So are you putting all your drainage running it down the outside of the building, or is it going to be concealed, or what?
The drainage means stormwater drainage.
Well, I see about, you know, 4 or 5 different pipes coming through the wall. So presumably
there's pipes overflow, not just for water, but there's also for electrical. We are already laid in the walls.
So you've got conduit.
It's actually a petroleum gasoline delivery pipe, which has a lot of steel in it. So the idea is that when electrical wires are inserted in that, it captures the magnetism that leaks out of the electrical wire.
Okay.
And then we connect all these hoses together electrically and earth it. so that the magnetism is not polluting the inside of the house. It's actually being earthed, you know. And so we have a what Rene calls electrically silent house. He is a building biologist and he's very passionate about EMF pollution, you know, which is caused by Wi-Fi and mobile phones and also electrical wires running around creating all these fields. And a lot of people, at least in India, they say 5% of the population is sensitive. And they have sleep disorders because their bedrooms have a lot of pollution, EMF pollution.
Yeah.
In cities, you have all these mobile phone towers and all these.
And what about the new technology you use for like internet and these kind of things because I think what. Before it was you thought about doing something very technical, huh?
Yeah.
Is it still the
still
idea?
There. With the internet, we say we will have wired connection
domotic.
Available.
Domotic. Yeah. Domotic. You don't know that name?
Domotica.
Yes. Domotica. What is that?
Home automation.
Yeah, we had that initial idea of docking stations for cell phones.
Yeah.
That you don't take this, you don't need to bring the cell phone in, but you have a docking station at the entrance, and the phone calls get diverted to your landline, and your phone does not have to really enter. It's like your dirty clothes, you know, like your boots and your.
About this, the home automation, I think it's more referred to what we want to do also with the. Control
DC,
of the
DC.
No, yeah, the, not only but only to control the amount of energy,
yeah.
Because we want to make a kind of internal
grid,
smart
yeah.
grid,
yeah.
Exactly. Actually to measure what is if one house has one cluster of houses has a surplus of energy and one has little
less, yeah.
That we can actually exchange in energy. In that sense, there is some domotica, some home automation.
Thankfully, we have Akash in Oroville who makes
Akash,
this,
who
makes these wattmans.
Yeah,
so and we can actually know how your batteries and your electrical system is behaving. If there's a surplus, you can always wattman. It can also work as a switch. You know, it can turn on and off switches to divert power to other places which don't have enough power. So in a way, the whole community can be power, what do you call it, self-reliant.
So this room we're now standing in is going to be what, like a living room?
Yes.
For the family?
It's a living room.
And there's a staircase?
It's got a
veranda.
Outside, private. That side is private. This side is more shared.
Okay.
And then there's a staircase going up to the bedroom.
Just a straight flight staircase?
Straight flight, wooden staircase.
Okay.
Goes up to the bedroom.
This is the bedroom, and that's where the bathroom is.
The bathroom is.
So if you want, if you're down here and you're... You need to go up.
That's one issue, but
yeah.
You know, there's always compromises one makes to make everything work. So, yeah.